won't come as news to anyone that the online world can be isolating, is contributing to rage, depression, extremism. There have also been studies that show that empathy, the ability to share and understand another person's feelings, has declined sharply in the 21st century. Well, our next guest writes, if it dies out completely, technology will be charged with the murder. But he's also found ways the web can foster empathy and spirituality. We've been taking a look at secular spirituality, a deep relationship with the human spirit outside of religious tenets. Today, spirituality in technology. Jamil Zaki teaches psychology at Stanford University, where his research includes empathy and social interaction. He also teaches a class on being kinder. We'll visit that in another program. His article, The Technology of Kindness, appeared in Scientific American. His recent book is The War for Kindness, Building Empathy in a Fractured World. And he joins us from Stanford. Jamil, Professor, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you write that this isn't coincidental, this fall in things like compassion, because major platforms like Facebook and Twitter are designed to amplify our worst angels. 70% of YouTube views come from the site's recommendations. So you see the things they think will get retweets, like conspiracy theories and bigotry. Is that pretty much the point?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you rewind to 10 years ago and look at an old issue of Wired, people were breathless thinking about the wonderful global community that we'd be able to have through the internet. And I think that that potential remains, but I don't think it's been fulfilled. And part of that is because technology platforms don't sort of help their shareholders by making users feel happy or socially connected, but by keeping them online. And so those platforms have been built, therefore, to play to whatever will keep us online, which is often our weaknesses, like vanity and fear, rather than our strengths.
Right. And this is what Google ethicist Tristan Harris calls extractive technology.
That's right. Yeah. So, for instance, if people are scared of folks who are different from them, right, a barrier to kindness and understanding, well, then, as you said, YouTube's algorithm might take someone who's looked at one video that has a political leaning, and then the suggestion might be the next most extreme version of that view, and then the next most extreme, all the way until this person is totally terrified of people who are different from themselves.
Yeah.
Likewise, on Twitter, William Brady and Molly Crockett and Jay Van Bavel have found that when people tweet in outrage towards people who are different from themselves, they're rewarded with likes and retweets, especially from people who already agree with them. Right. And so those little bursts of social approval then make it more likely that people will express even more outrage. In essence, we're being sort of pumped up to feel separate from others and to express animosity, even hatred towards them.
Yeah. Well, so Tristan Harris, stay with him. He created something called the Center for Humane Technology to create regenerative experiences. I mean, it sounds like it would be the opposite of something that extracts emotion and, spiritual feeling from you. It kind of siphons out your spirituality.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think fear and hatred and vanity are all really powerful psychological forces. But to the point of your series, so are connection and community and empathy. And so a question then becomes, how do we design technologies, online platforms especially, that help us express that deep sort of affinity with others that resides inside us?
Yeah.
So Juliana Schroeder at Berkeley has found that when people read somebody's opinion as opposed to hearing them in their own voice talk about that opinion, they're less likely to see that person as fully human.
Yeah.
So we're missing out on some of the cues that allow us to recognize our common humanity with others.
Okay, so talk about how technology and websites are seeking to change that. One of the sites is called Change of View. Tell us about that.
So on Change of View, people post about things that are controversial, even troubling, but the incentive structure is different from that of Twitter. So on Change of View, you have to kind of post a long opinion, and you have to be open to having your view changed, hence the title of the site. And when other people respond, they also have to engage thoughtfully and open-mindedly. And whereas on Twitter, for instance, you might receive a retweet for insulting somebody personally, on Change of View, other people can reward you with what are called deltas. This is the recognition from a reader that, hey, you know, what you said actually made me see things differently. So in other words, you're rewarding people not for inflammatory posts. You're rewarding them for being thoughtful and for really engaging with each other.
Okay. And you say that this results in these, you know, beautiful long threads of conversation. But my first response, and cynic in me says, wait, this hasn't been hacked yet, you know, by trolls, by people who really don't want to have thoughtful conversations.
Yeah, so Change of View is a moderated site. You know, and I think that part of it comes down to what type of regulation do we want to have on online communities? I think that's part of the issue here, is sort of how do we keep these communities sort of true to their ideals?
Yeah, there's one called Rare Connect. Now, this is where, again, the internet can be, you know, what the hope was it would be. This is for people who have rare illnesses, a place for them to connect and discuss it.
Yeah, rare illnesses are a paradox, right? They affect less than 1 in 1,000 people, but there are so many of them, like hundreds of them, that basically more than 1 in 10 people has an illness where they probably have never met another person who has it in real life. So that can be really isolating, stigmatizing, but online communities, including lots of Facebook groups, but then larger sites like Rare Connect, offer these individuals a chance to find a community of people who understand and share their experiences.
Well, then you have Coco and Seven Cups. And by the way, we're going to list all of this at herenow.org. But it's sort of like a GoFundMe for emotions or something. You know, people get on and they can actually express a struggle. Other people can step in to provide support, even if it's just a conversation. There was a 2015 survey. Seven Cups users described this kindness that they received, you write, that it was as helpful as professional psychotherapy.
Yeah, that's right. And again, I certainly don't want to suggest that going to an online message board could be a replacement for professional help, especially if people are really in crisis. But, you know, a lot of us are dealing with just sort of mundane stress, anxiety, and we just want to talk to somebody. And we think of the anonymity of life online as a barrier to social connection. But on some of these sites, it can actually facilitate it. Mm-hmm. I might be able to open up about something that's facing me more easily to a stranger than I would even to people who I do know. And on these sites like Seven Cups, there's just this huge community of people waiting to empathically listen and respond. And it can be hugely affirming for both parties.
And in fact, you cite a psychologist who did a study.
That's right. Bruce Doré and his colleagues studied Coco. And they've basically looked at users who were either going on Coco to ask for help or going on Coco and sort of providing support to others. Believe it or not, the ones who had the most positive outcome were not those who were receiving help, but the ones who were giving help to others. Yeah. Oftentimes we think of kindness to others as something that sort of will deplete us. But instead, it turns out being kind to others helps us as well.
There are other sites, Random Acts of Kindness. We actually did a story on that. Will You Stand, the letter U, which helps bystanders, you know, be able to stand up for somebody they see being wronged.
I guess the message of regenerative technology is that there are tons of people, millions of people who, if they could, would want to interact in a more productive and kind way online. The question is, how do we create those opportunities for them and make sure that they're available to everybody?
Yeah. And what can we as consumers of technology do to kind of hold Google and Facebook, you know, hold their feet to the fire for how much they've been a part of propelling hatred?
Well, I mean, Tristan Harris and others are trying to work in part with these platforms. I think a lot of people at Facebook and Twitter are sort of now thinking a lot more intentionally about how what their platforms have done and maybe if they can have a more positive impact. As users, what can we do? We can vote with our feet or vote with our clicks, as it were, and try to spend time online in places that make us feel connected. That begins with what I call an internal audit. When I'm online, at least, and trust me, Robin, I also feel hopeless often when I'm on Twitter especially, but I try to ask myself, is this the experience that I'm looking for? Or is there something that I can do today online that will be more positive? Instead of tweeting in anger, can I support somebody? Can I message a friend on Facebook who I haven't talked to in years? Or find somebody who's expressing struggle and let them know that I see them? If we all make choices like that, well, that's different than sort of regulation and putting platforms' feet to the fire, but at least we can start a movement from the ground up.
That's Stanford Professor Jamil Zaki talking about the secular spiritual connections that you can possibly make through technology. Jamil, thank you.
Thank you.